Hi, good evening. This is your host, Deborah Herman, mystic medium animal communicator extraordinaire, and tonight you are listening to Soul Odyssey Radio. Each week we talk about different topics about the paranormal, or what I consider the normal, and we talk about different topics of Soul Odyssey, which is a journey with tribulation, and what I believe is that we are here in Classroom Earth to learn lessons. There are seven of them, and the lessons, as I've been teaching over the last several months, are courage, tolerance, self-protection, self-love, ego, love of humanity, and God-love. And we are I will find a way to tie today's topic into those lessons. But we are very, very fortunate tonight to have as our guest an author, healer, and all-around interesting person, Patricia McGivern. Are you there, Patricia?
Yes, I am. Hi.
Hi. You can add to that introduction. I always I seem to be tripping over my words tonight. The reason I invited Patricia onto the show, well, first of all, I so enjoyed last week having guests on the show. This is a live call-in show. I'll tell you right now that our call-in number is 888-815-9756, and we will be taking calls throughout the hour. But we had a really great show last week with guests, and I decided, you know, maybe I should look for some wonderful and interesting people out there who can add some of their thoughts as we discuss life, the afterlife, and all of the things that are now becoming more common knowledge, thank God. But Patricia has written a very interesting book called Angel Babies, Messages from Miscarried and Other Lost Babies, and it's a very interesting read. We'll tell you later how to reach Patricia's website and how to contact her further for more information. But what attracted me to the topic, because I get a whole list of people who are available to be on talk shows, and what attracted me was that last week we were talking about connecting with our loved ones who have passed on, and we heard some EVP, and that's electronic voice phenomenon. And for those of you who missed last week's show, check out the archives on, of course, bbsradio.com, and you can download them. But we were talking about the importance and the healing that happens when you are able to know in no uncertain terms that you are connecting with the child that you have lost, and there is no greater tragedy than losing a child either at a very, very young age or, of course, in utero, miscarriage, and in certain situations, of course, a choice to to lose a child, which is never a really good choice for anyone, mostly because of how a person feels afterward. Let's introduce Patricia a little bit, and then I think we're going to start getting some callers. Patricia,
great.
Tell us how you, you know, after reading your book, I know that you have been about the most reluctant person. I mean, half of your book is trying to figure out how on earth you're not crazy, because you were a total corporate type of person, and, you know, just to, cut to the chase, tell your story real quick.
Yeah, well, that's exactly
real quick.
I was in the corporate world for nearly 20 years, and now I look back, and at the time I didn't think I was, metaphysical, but now looking back, I was probably very open, but there was also a very big skeptic in me. And so when things began happening, there were certain things I never doubted, you know, like hearing a voice, and that's really where the book starts, and in a lot of ways, you know, after the miscarriage, where the story starts, because we miscarried a baby, and 4.5 years later, as I was taking a nap and waking up in that in-between state, I heard very clearly right next to me on my left side, "I'm right here. I'm right here." And my eyes popped open because we had had another child after the miscarriage, and she was 3 years old, and I was afraid she'd gotten up from her nap before I woke up. And it was one of those rare days where I took a nap, and I was very surprised. She wasn't in the room with me. It's like, what? And so I assumed, of course, that she was on the other side of the closed bedroom door and kept asking her to come in to find me, and Mommy was here. When she didn't come and I started looking for her downstairs, and it's not that big of a house, and I didn't hear her, you know, little footsteps go off. You know how you start thinking, well, I know what I heard, you know. It was very clear, very insistent, and a little perturbed.
Let me put this out there to our audience, because I know that our audience is made up of many people who are either have been reluctant and now believe or are interested in spirituality and metaphysics. How many of you out there have ever thought you might have been a little crazy because you start hearing things, you know, that they're as real to you as can be, but then, as you said, that little skeptic in you is just saying, no, I mean, I can't, this can't be. And that's why I liked the EVP last week, because, you know, we actually all had to say, yes, we all heard the same thing. But I know that for a long time you really just couldn't believe. And then didn't you have a massage?
Yes. A week later, I had a massage, and during the massage, at the very beginning, in fact, my massage therapist said, "He's here." And I said, "Who's here?" And I started to cover up. And she said, "The baby you lost." And I said, "Who's here?" And I'm looking through the open door where she's looking. And she begins to describe a small little boy. And I had always felt the baby was a boy, but my husband, Tim, had always felt equally so that the baby was a girl. So we had never named the baby. And she began to describe a child that looked exactly like my two children, who she had never seen or even seen pictures of, with very blonde hair. And I've got auburn hair, actually, and big blue eyes. And this is exactly what my daughters look like. But she had no way of knowing that. And so the communication began then. And I think at the beginning I was like, you know, of course, very skeptical. Who is this? And but how old does the child look to be? And she said, "Well, he looks to be about 4. And I had never told her how long ago I had had a miscarriage. In fact, my memory was that when she said, "How are you doing?" I said, "Well, I've been thinking a lot about the baby I lost." But she didn't know if that was a week ago, a month ago, or a year ago.
Well, all I know is, and then I'm going to take a caller real quick so we can allow people to interject. But I remember from your book that the massage therapist was a little bit surprised herself. She said that she hadn't that she wasn't one to actually see with her eyes open, but there was this, you know, child who really, really wanted to connect with you and made his presence known. And we'll let you finish that story in a moment. Let's take a call from Lorinda from L.A.
Hi.
Hi, Lorinda.
Hi there. How are you?
Hi, nice to meet you.
Nice
you
to meet
well.
You, too.
So we'll try not to all talk at once, but I haven't mastered that yet. Is there a comment? Is there a comment or a question that you would like to make?
No, that's what I was going to say. I don't really have a question. I'm not really sure how this is going yet, but I do have an angel baby. I have a son, Bodhi, who passed away at 8 months.
Oh my. And have you felt? How did you begin to feel the connection to him?
Immediately, at his funeral, a pink flower fell into his hand, and as my father was pointing it out to me, the lights flashed, and we were just all amazed, and I just said, thank you, Bodhi, and I've been very spiritual since birth, but really, really studying it and into it for the last 20 years, so they all knew, and I said, thank you, I need signs like that, and that was 3 years ago that he passed away, and he has been flashing the lights for me ever since.
Well, another, I'll let you comment in a second, Patricia, but there was another reason that I wanted to do this show, because I think we're all very curious what happens to these children when they pass over, or when they have kind of like life interruptus. I mean, have they planned ahead of time to only be here a short time? Is there some reason that they've had an effect on the family that they're with for only a short time? And, you know, are they babies in the afterlife? And I think we have some answers to those questions. I think you have, Patricia, and then...
Yes.
They definitely come
up. I'm sorry. Go ahead,
Lorinda.
Oh no, I was just saying all those questions definitely come up.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
And I think that we've been coming up with some answers. Patricia, you've had a practice now and for a long time with you're a hypnotist. And also, you've been working with this area for many, many years and have interviewed a lot of women and have gotten some answers from them of what their experience has been. Do you want to share some of that with us?
Yes, I think, you know, what's amazing to me is that, well, after I had my experiences and once I finally believed, which took years, I knew I couldn't be the only one, and so I put some information out through various resources and began doing research on this and had responses from women and two dads from all over the world. And I think what's remarkable is that not only is it, you know, these things can happen globally, but to anyone in any socioeconomic education level, belief system. I even had someone who wrote to me who was agnostic, one claimed to be atheist, and yet they were having these profound experiences that people rarely talk about, the loss of miscarried babies or other early lost babies, let alone these types of experiences, because they're so profound to the person, the mother or the parent having them, that to share them with someone who may not understand that deep connection and make light of it, you know, it's just too precious. So many of the people said, I've never shared this with other people, but I can't believe you're talking about this. And if it will help any other woman heal from the loss of their baby, then yes, please share my story. So
yeah,
what
yeah.
I'm learning... Yeah, exactly. What I'm learning is that, you know, one of the questions you had was, you know, basically, do they grow up on the other side, right? Is that what you're saying,
yeah.
Deborah? And, yes, I think they do grow up on the other side, but I think also we need to remember that, you know, they are a soul that is timeless. And so, in essence, really, they can be any age that they want to be, but I think what happens is that when they contact us, if they contact us in certain ways, they come at a certain age so that we will recognize them. when Dylan showed up to Marianne, the massage therapist, he showed up as the four-year-old so that I would recognize him.
And know that that was, yeah. But I now you've given me the segue I was looking for to talk about the lessons.
Yes.
Because you said that these are timeless souls of people, and since nothing ever dies, this may have been a choice of how they were going to incarnate in a particular life to connect with a soul, and they might have only, I read in your book where there are situations where the soul might have only wanted to be on Earth for a short period of time and then wanted to return to spirit in order to continue lessons on that side. Or we talked last week about Mark Macy, who is an expert on EVP and spirit communication, and he has a story on his website, which I think is very relevant to this, where there is a young girl who was very gifted spiritually, and she and spirit decided that she was able to help humanity better on the other side by staying connected and showing people, you know, that there is life after life. So there are many, many reasons, and it's all part of the lessons. It's never without a reason.
That's exactly right. And we think, Deborah, that as mothers, we always, our first inclination, I think, is just being human, is what did we do wrong to cause the miscarriage? You know, I shouldn't have been in the house when they sprayed for bugs, or I shouldn't have gone for that long run, or I drank coffee, or, you know, that there's something that we did as a mother that may have caused this, only to discover in my research that it has very little to do with us. And even if there's something we've done, it was all part of a soul agreement. And to come into this life or not to come into this life, for the lessons that perhaps the mother would learn, the father would learn, the baby would learn. And that is a whole other concept that I was not familiar with. You know, we always feel that we are making these decisions. What if we knew that the babies knew before they came how long they would be here?
These decisions are bigger than all of us, and the whole purpose of knowing about our soul journey is to shift our awareness, to know that some things we really don't cause, and to know that you can still, Lorinda, to know that you can still be connected to your child is an amazing thing. Now, how long ago was the loss of your child?
3 years ago.
And do you still have signs? Correct?
Yes, I do. And I have other ways that I connect with him. So I connect with him a lot.
Do you have a sense
of
what
it's so good?
Well, do you have a sense of what it's like where he is?
I have felt him. I feel his energy. I have felt him when it was just days afterwards, and I was looking in the mirror, and I was looking in my eyes, but looking at his, and just crying and asking why. And I felt him as a man come behind me and wrap his arms around me. I have felt him as big and as tall as the clouds. He's huge.
Mm-hmm. He's a spirit.
Yeah,
he's a spirit. And
energy. Yeah.
It's all energy. Well, I'm going to say goodbye to you, Lorinda, but please listen and call again. And thank you so much for sharing your story with us.
I will.
Yeah,
thank
please
you,
do.
Both of you.
Yes, you're very welcome. I wanted to add a perspective that you had talked about in your book, Patricia, about how we really are able to talk to our babies. And I don't believe, I mean, I've had three pregnancies and, thank God, three children. I don't think, you know, unless things can happen that you really are unaware of, I don't think I've experienced a miscarriage. But I do know that, you know, that with each child, I was becoming more awake psychically and spiritually. And mm-hmm. with my youngest child, I know I talked to her before she was born. And I know that I talked to her during labor, and it made it a million times easier. It's like we did it together. I kept saying to her, "Don't worry, let's not object to the pain. Let's just, you know, let's go. We're gonna breathe, and it's gonna, and here it is." And and it was just such, it was an amazing experience. And I don't know why I had more awareness at that time. Might have just been I was delirious from natural childbirth. but I was aware, and also of her essence. I had found a painting even before she was a thought, but I just had a feeling that I was going to have a child like her, and it's a really funny etching, old-fashioned etching, and it's truly her personality. She's a drama queen, and it just shows her, and she laughs. She said, "Mom, that's me," and it was, I had it, you know, 20 years before she was even born. Wow. Isn't that interesting?
Yeah, that's the soul's knowing, you know?
Uh-huh.
We have glimpses of that sometimes, you know, and they can come to us, one of the main ways they come to us is through the dream state. You know, that's the easiest way for them to communicate with us when our conscious mind is sleeping. And they can come and let us know that they may not be coming. In one of the stories in my book, a woman from Puerto Rico, the baby came to let the mother know that the time wasn't right. And the mother did feel good about this communication, but she didn't understand what the baby meant. But 1 month later, her husband died. So.
Yeah.
You know, this is something that perhaps that baby needed to come into this world with a father, maybe that father. So it's very interesting, you know, and even, you know, in my case, my baby, as much as painful as it was to lose that very wanted baby, I understand now that the gift was in his coming, even briefly, to help me grow as a soul. That couldn't be done in any other way than through the loss. And not only to help me grow, but apparently to help others as well. So that this is the basis of the book, Angel Babies. This is not a book I wanted to write or thought I would write. This was...
Well, let me tell you, about 80 pages into the book, I kind of got that sense. Because how many times in the book do you mention, "I really wasn't planning to write this book"?
Right.
I really wasn't planning, but you know, my son kept coming in, and the psychics and everybody, and they were beating me over the head, you know, and then you finally got down to it. But I think there are two things that we also need to talk about. One is that people really do not understand that to a person who has a miscarriage, this is a life. It is a child. It is not, it wasn't really a baby, so just get over it. So if anything, I think it's important for you to create an example and having these other mothers come forward that, you know, this is life. So people need to be more sensitive to how others feel about this loss. You know, they're all well-meaning, and, you know, we might even say, well, it was meant to be, but it on what level? You know, we still have to go through the grief and the understanding, and it's not easy for anyone.
Thank you. That's exactly right. And nobody was talking about the miscarried babies. It's like you said, it wasn't a real baby. You'll have another. Something must have been wrong. These aren't things that make us feel better. And the book that I was given when I miscarried a baby from my midwife had to do with what went wrong physically. Well, that may have helped my mind ever so briefly, but it didn't help heal my heart. I needed a book like what I've written about that they aren't gone, you know. And some of the women have come to me who are in still deep grief over the loss of a baby that I'm talking a decade, more than a decade grief. And when they understand that the only connection with the baby doesn't have to be grief, that before the grief was love, and the love survived.
Right.
The love is what's there. And yes, grieving as humans, we must grieve and walk through that. And here's the thing with miscarried babies. When you hear a mother say, I miscarried my baby, listen carefully to what her soul is really saying. I missed caring my baby.
I messed up also.
Yeah.
And let's talk. Now, this is a live call-in show. I will remind our audience, if you want to call in and give us a comment or a question, 888-815-9756. That's 888-815-9756. But, Patricia, I want to raise another issue, particularly with my healing work and my energy work. I've been very surprised sometimes because, you know, when you're tuning into someone, there's a certain amount of privacy. And I always, you know, I always ask God to just show me what I need to be shown. And then you're a little hesitant sometimes to tell people things that you pick up. But it's happened several times where I've been told, as I'm doing energy balancing work or a reading, there was a child. And then the person will say, no, I don't have any children. And then they'll remember, oh, I miscarried. You know, it's like it's so buried, and it, you know, I'm given that information to show them, no, that was really a soul that for whatever period of time was connected to you. And another thing that I find is that I will be shown if a woman's had an abortion. And it's amazing to me, even though and I'm not a I'm not a judgmental person whatsoever. I mean, I think there are circumstances on all sides where we make decisions that we make. But what's interesting is on the deepest soul level, typically the women who have had abortions grieve in a way that no one ever does because they can't really forgive themselves because they have an inner conflict. What's been important in my healing work, of course, is to say, look, you know, God isn't judging you for that. You need to stop judging you, and you need to forgive yourself. And I think, haven't you had some stories of women who've actually heard from their children who say that they forgive?
Absolutely. One of the stories that just stands out to me is that the baby was telling the mother, yes, I forgive you, but there's nothing to forgive. And it's and what I've noticed is that the babies do not condemn or morally judge, you know, their mothers for decisions that are made. There are times when they know that this is going to happen. And if more women who find themselves in a place where they're not ready to have a baby, if they begin talking to this child directly, you know, and just saying, the timing's not right. You know, can you come again later? If that's what they want, you know, if they want to have a baby one day when they're older or whatever the situation, talk to the baby and explain to the baby why the timing isn't right. Many times they'll experience then a natural miscarriage.
Well, I also don't want this point to, I want to make this point again, that there are women particularly who are now, you know, let's say in their 50s or more, who when they were very young women had abortions. And I think it's really important for them to go into prayer or meditation and to go through a ritual to acknowledge that that was a baby and that was a soul. And even though there's nothing to forgive, they're not forgiving themselves because they had that connection, and they need to recognize, you know, that they're not going to be condemned for that. I mean, they need to be able to grieve that loss and accept it for what it is. I think that's really important because I see people just being stuck on their soul path.
Mm-hmm. And what that can end up causing, Deborah, as you know, is physical illness. You know,
absolutely.
The emotional root cause of a physical illness, if we don't heal and forgive ourselves, then it can manifest in different ways. And that's why the forgiveness, self-forgiveness, is so important. And many women come to me who've lost babies and then tell me, oftentimes, you know, I may be the first person they've ever shared it with, I had an abortion when I was young, and this is God's way of taking back that child, you know. So they have that in their mind that they're being punished. And that isn't what I'm understanding at all from the babies.
Well, that's not what I understand of God. I don't see that
exactly.
We, you know, I think we all judge ourselves, but I think we judge ourselves much more harshly. And I think that the God that I know wants us to feel loved unconditionally. And, you know, that if we felt that way to begin with, it might cause many of us to make different decisions in the first place, such as, you know, teenagers not acting out. You know, I mean, there's so many different things that would change if, you know, we wouldn't maybe have teen pregnancies or you know, whatever the situation is. It's a whole cycle. And I think that the babies are trying, because who doesn't, well, how can you argue with a baby? You know,
right.
It's like, how can you argue with an angel? But so I think that I was reading a lot of different information that people have about what it's like on the other side, and I think we can get back to the idea that these children, if it's a baby that's lost at a very early age, it will often, if it returns, like immediately, from what I understand from reading from different spiritual teachers and psychics, if the baby immediately returns, it doesn't have as much orientation to go through in order to get back on his or her soul path. But if the baby's been on Earth a little longer, then the baby will not have as much orientation and can typically move ahead, which is why you might see that child, when it comes back to visit, is actually older. You know, it just depends on the situation and whether it was a soul agreement to pass or not. That's why you would see your son at 4 years old. He was probably with relatives and family who were actually raising him past the baby stage so that he could return to his education as a soul. Does that make sense?
Yes, absolutely, right.
Because things go on the other side. It's not just like, you know, it's not like they just sit on clouds with harps.
Right. That's right.
And or with just Philadelphia cream cheese or whatever that is, that commercial.
And they're just a thought away. You know, they can come in so many ways to us. You know, I had mentioned through the dream state before, but also in meditation, you know, in hypnosis, which is really an altered state that we go in and out of throughout the day anyways. We just didn't know what it was called, you know, when we daydream or,
yeah,
you know,
well, my sister would say I'm always hypnotized.
So they can come to us, and what when we are open to this and just, you know, ask for the communication and then pay attention and watch for even, you know, just synchronistic signs, whether it's butterflies or I had one beautiful story of a baby that was named with an unusual name, but on certain days, both the mother and father would see this name everywhere, like on trucks and on billboards, and it was just unreal. And, you know, these are signs, and there's also oftentimes a feeling attached to that, and you know that it's them.
Now, it's amazing. Now, you have a story also Let's go back to talking about I'll get back to that. Let's go back to talking about ways that people can connect with their children.
Okay.
You talked about the dream state. You talked about meditation. Of course, you can contact a medium.
Yes, absolutely.
You did that.
I did that a lot of times.
And why was that, Miss Patricia?
Because the skeptic in me when I was given the message, I didn't hear it directly. It was through Marianne that Dylan said that one of my life's missions was to write a book titled Angel Babies to help heal the mommies who've lost their babies. Now, as poignant as that is today to say that, at the time, my thought was, what? Wrong mommy, wrong life mission, I'm not a writer, what do I know? And people will think I'm crazy. Yeah, I'm not going to do that because they'll think I'm crazy.
Yeah, welcome to the club.
And my husband's a mental health counselor, so anytime anything happened, and I would say, you're not going to believe what happened to me. And then it would always, after I would tell the story, I'd say, now, you're sure I'm not going crazy, or am I going crazy? And he, you know,
well,
he just.
You know what he would probably say to you, which is my favorite line, is that if you are asking whether or not you're crazy, then you're not. Right?
Yes, exactly. That's exactly right.
Exactly, because there, all of these things are beyond our day-to-day comprehension, but truly, if we were thinkers like, years and years ago in the mystery schools, or it's called lunar thinking, we would automatically assume the intuitive reality. And we've been taught for many, many years to assume the scientific reality. So I've just decided, what the hey, I know who I am. I know that I'm always going to go for the God oriented intuitive reality before I'm going to want to go through. I don't have the patience to go through the scientific reality. My brain's not wired that way. So I think, you need to start most of your discussion at this point with, I know I'm not crazy. This is my experience. And then as you have, you're going to have people coming out of every nook and cranny saying, wait, I experienced that too. We can't all be crazy.
Right. And that is why, actually, Deborah, I think that I began my research, because I wanted to, just in case I was going crazy, I wanted to be sure I wasn't alone. And I think that's really why I started the research. And what happened is all of their stories ended up validating my story. And, you know, yes, and so I continued today with researching this, and if anybody is interested in sharing their story with me privately, I would love to hear from them. At you can go on my website, www.patriciamcgivern.com. And
now you have to spell that.
Well,
that. That's Patricia, M-C,
yeah, Patricia, capital G, V as in Victor, E-R-N, as in Nancy, .com. So, like McGivern, only McGivern.
Thank you very much for that, because you know how people hear things, and it always comes out a little bit different. And I do want to say, by the way, you know, we're talking flippantly about, you know, am I crazy, am I not crazy? There's really nothing wrong with being crazy. It's just that what we're really talking about is, do I fit into society, and am I now going to find myself being placed up to ridicule? And that's what we're really worried about when we have these, you know, major epiphanies, and when we're being told by spirit and by our spirit babies that we now have to follow our soul mission to help other people understanding, you know, the nature of true reality. You know, we know on the one hand, oh, wow, that's really cool. I can do something to help God and humanity. But on the other hand, what we are really afraid of is that people will not believe us and that they will condemn us. And quite frankly, you know, if this were even 20 years ago, I think there would be less safety in numbers. But I'm banking on the fact that more people are believing in this way of interpreting God and the universe, and understanding that there is a very, very thin veil between this side and that side. So I think you can continue your work without feeling so threatened about being, you know, ridiculed.
Yes, well, that those feelings went away, because when I did begin to start writing, you know, I talk about this in the book. One of the things that happened is, you know, being in a bookstore and seeing a different type of book being written about miscarriage, where it talks about the grief, and I thought I could write about that possibly. That seemed more mainstream to me. But what I realized very quickly, that it would have been a cop-out, and that I would have missed an opportunity for my soul's growth. And so, you know, with great courage, I began to walk through all of this. And, you know, you get to a certain age too, Deborah, where you care less about what people think. And now it's, these are my experiences. Take what you like and leave the rest.
Hey, I'm not at that age. No, I'm just kidding. But it really is a state of mind, and I'm not going to say what my age is, but you're absolutely right. And it's really more, when I say it's a state of mind, I think it's when we start to realize that the voice that we're hearing, other than loved ones who are also connecting with us, is really our soul, and that our soul is connecting with the divine essence, and we can't argue with that. And once we connect with that, we can feel that centered sense of safety and love. And that's when we can feel like, hey, you don't like it? Lump it. You know, wasn't that an old expression? If you know that expression, then we're probably getting close to being the same age.
Yes.
Okay. And so, you know, really, you have to follow your soul's path. But I especially want our listeners to understand. Now, not everybody who is listening, I know that we, thank goodness, we have regular listeners who are interested in the show and whatever we talk about, because we never know where it's going to go. But for the listeners who have experienced the loss of a baby at an early stage, I really want them to take seriously the need to recognize this as a true loss and to give it the love, the support, and the grieving that it really deserves. And then to restore the love that it deserves. Tell us, we're getting close to the end of the hour. I can't believe it's gone so fast. I want you to tell us about three things. One, okay. the drawing that Maggie made.
Yes.
Was it Maggie?
Yes, that's so sweet. I've got goosebumps because you're calling her Maggie. Yes. Megan, Maggie was to, as I mentioned in my story, was to have come with Dylan. And he had fulfilled his purpose, but she wanted me to be her mother so much that she returned to me. I did not know I was pregnant with twins, and I really have no way to validate that except to just know, just like with everything else, that this is the truth. And so she has come back to me, and she made a drawing, the one that you're referring to. There's a picture of it in the book. At one point, I was praying to God to help her. She was struggling with speaking. I'm not the quickest person, apparently, because years later, as I'm sitting there listening to her struggling, learning how to say her L's and her R's correctly, I realized that it could never have been Megan who said, "I'm right here," because she would have said, "I'm right here. I'm right here."
Yeah, exactly.
But that day, I was watching her struggling, you know, in speech therapy, and asked for Dylan's help and said, "If there's anything you can do to help your sister." And later that day, she went to play with a friend, and she wasn't, most children, you know, like coloring and drawing. She did not like it at all. And when I picked her up from her friend, she had done a drawing, and the other kids had done stick popsicle people. And I thought, oh, this isn't going to end well. You know, would there be tears? And she walked forward, and she was so proud, and she said, "I drew a picture." And I said, "Really? Show it to me, please." And in it were five of us, and she pointed each one, and in the middle was Dylan. Now, we did not use Dylan's name for a long time. For her, she probably hadn't even heard his name for months, and she was just a little girl at the time. And we hadn't talked about him by name for a long time on purpose, because I was certain she was talking to him on a telephone, which was the only toy that held her interest, but it was a very well-kept secret, so she never admitted if she was. But that day she drew a picture, and as you can kind of tell in the book where, you know, I share that, it looks like there's like a halo above his head.
Yep.
And it's the only drawing she ever did, and it's the only drawing, of course, of the family she ever did. And I framed it, and it's in the kitchen where all good drawings go.
Yeah, really. And I think what you were saying in the book is that she was having trouble, like, with her fine motor skills. So
yes.
It was hard for her to do this.
It was very difficult for her.
And didn't she say that
she enjoyed doing?
Yeah. So, and I'm looking at it right now. I can't show it through the radio, but it's really, really an adorable picture. And there's no doubt there's a Dylan in the middle with a halo.
Mm-hmm.
And the other story is about Dylan's tree.
Yes,
tell us about Dylan's tree.
Well, Kylie was our firstborn child, and we planted a tree after she was born. And so when my husband and I, when I became pregnant, this time I wanted to plant a tree while I was pregnant so that as I grew and the baby grew inside me, the tree would grow too. And I chose a camphor tree because it's this big, beautiful tree. And in Florida, you know, you don't get big, beautiful trees there. You know, it's pine trees and palm trees.
Uh-huh.
We planted the tree, and it didn't grow. In fact, it died. There were brittle limbs that you could break off. The leaves, you know, disappeared. And after we lost the baby, months after, I would say, "Tim, would you cut that darn tree down?" The baby didn't live, and either did the tree. And it was, you know, a reminder of what we had lost. And he would just say, "Yes, honey, I will cut it down." But it never got cut down. And years passed, Deborah, 3.5 mm-hmm. years, maybe 4 even. And one day, and I, you know, would get used to looking out at the dead tree, reminder of what we had lost. And One day I looked out and I saw green. And I ran downstairs to it and there were new buds. And, you know, when we just let our intuition or the God within us talk to us without the screening, we can learn, like, the truth of things. And my first thought was, it's the baby trying to say that he or she's okay. I didn't know at the time. And then he's, you know, the baby's alive. And today, this tree has grown. It is about 20 feet tall and about 20 feet wide. It's beautiful, and it's so big you can climb up into it. And we call it Dylan's tree. And sometimes the girls and I will go out there and sit in the tree, and we talk to him there. And it's a beautiful tree and something for me to give a hug to.
What was the timing between when you first started hearing him and when the tree started to grow again?
The tree was the first sign, I think. I think it was acknowledging it that day. I knew it was, I remember saying, I hear you, baby. And I was trying to share with Tim how important this was, and he wasn't getting it quite like I was.
He just needed time.
And
you know those mental health professionals.
I know. Well, it turns out he as you can tell in the story, finally he's believing before I am, and at the very end. But it was just amazing. I think by validating that, just by honoring the baby with that, I didn't know what I was doing. That enabled the baby, and I started thinking. You know, we always wondered, was it a boy or was it a girl? But I really, you know, the loss of the baby wasn't part of my daily life. Again, when I heard the baby, it had been 4.5 years. I had another child right after Megan. And I thought of it from time to time, but it wasn't part of my daily life. So when this happened, it was just, you know, I think what happens is when you honor these things or that they are open to giving you more. And the more I acknowledged it, the more I got. You know?
The more you got. And I do want to mention your website again. We are getting close to the end of the hour. Like I said, this has just gone by so fast, and I will want you to come back at some point. Tell us your website again.
Yes, it's www.patricia.com. McGivern, M-C, capital G-I, V as in Victor, ERN.com. The book is available on Amazon.com and BarnesandNoble.com. But please visit me on my website, and I would love to hear if you have had an experience of communication.
And also let me know, don't forget me. Your host, mystic medium animal communicator Deborah Herman. I can be reached on Facebook under Deborah Levine Herman, go figure, or on my fan page, which is something like that. Or you can some derivative of that, or you can. Reach me on my website, which is www.soul-odyssey.com. Do not forget the dash, soul-odyssey.com. And that also lists my email, which is Deborah@soul-odyssey.com. Thank you so much for joining us this evening. I know we got a little bit of a late start, but it was well worth it. Patricia, I can't thank you enough. And, you know, I did figure out what my little gift was before I opened it, but, you know, sometimes that's the disadvantage of being psychic. I figured it out, but I was so pleased. Thank you so much. But you'll all have to read the book in order to know what my gift was. So I encourage you to do so. It was really worth reading. So God bless you all. Do you have anything else to say, Patricia?
I just wanted to say thank you so much for having me on your show, and on behalf of Dylan and all the angel babies, thank you very much.
God bless.
Thank you.